seems to me that a lot of poetry comes from not poetry. Often for me, my poems come from other art forms that aren't literary art forms, the visual arts, the kinds of things that we see in museums. And because of that, a number of the poems in my manuscript are about paintings and sculptures. And this one that I'll read to you is called Museum Freeze. And for me, I'm attempting in the poem to characterize the fact that if you go to a museum of modern art or postmodern art, it's possible to have all of the museums in one museum. You have the archaeological museum there. You have in the layers and the icons and the images that the artists use, you have the social history and you have the natural history. And so there's a kind of kaleidoscope effect for me in that, and this poem is attempting to get to that. It's called Museum Freeze, and freeze is spelled F-R-I-E-Z-E. It's that band of stone sometimes underneath the roof of a building where there's often an illustration or a relief. Showing the rise and fall of long years in the daytime, the museum's outer face exists as a frieze. An angel waves to a crowd of dancers with both wings, her lips trembling. Then the actual shows up as sweet swallows nest in silent doorway pockets. I'm whipped about by wind. I'm heavy with expectation. I'm an easily broken private citizen on a boulevard of groomed poplars. Soon the high season clientele will ingest the conceptual enigma du jour served in a light visual buffet. It's unclear, for example, in the bathhouse scene, whether two men, half hidden by a third, are touching each other or themselves. Or it's unclear in the bathhouse scene whether two men, half hidden by a door, are touching each other or a third. Your own observation might bend to a peripheral view, a slow sex scene along the river. This preoccupation with history, a hoarse world like a spectral carousel, opens a row of canvas miniatures on the side. No one knows that this beautiful city is the model for that beautiful city. The interval between the lines grows larger and larger, traversing the entire floor until the viewer walks steadily on the surface of the globe. The female voiceover declares, "I am Adam's sculptor in his dream. I hem the bamboo coverings with black fringe. I cap the entire tent with finials, then drape the folds into slow ripples skirting his lagoon." Because we started out in shadows, because our mothers hunched and weary-looking plod along the edge, feeling like pioneers, because crowds pass, because men gather in harmony and graze like sheep and fawns, because photo and text essays, plant-filled atriums, art under siege, and sparsely hung exhibitions chronicle our own reflections, because functional aspects, eating, washing, sleeping, give way to two views of her torso in private relation to eating, washing, sleeping, because the entire facade must be replaced, several versions, doves caught in the frescoed reeds, vie for ascendance. Adam's tent as the tentative negotiation between the sea and the sky, as opulent casino, as the machete of his nomadic heart embossed on the blank 19th century grandeur of the city. Long, local breaths, louder in succession, characteristic of the sleeping man. Lorenzo on the breath of Flora, Emilio in a world of blood and white palms, Enrique in the ant, in the sea, in the vacuous eyes of the birds. Later that same day, when the emperor ordered the autumn leaves to lie down, the execution of the artist shocked the world. In the last line there, I adapt a few sentences from Lorca that you might have recognized.